Welcome back to the Lace Out Podcast and my special interview with Jack Fitzpatrick. In part two of our chat, he talks about the difference between Melbourne and Hawthorn, draft picks versus development. He goes into the addictiveness of playing finals. We also talk about his concussions and his love for free agency and how it's a great thing for the game. So let's get straight into it. We're not going to cue the music this time. We're just going to continue with our chat with the great Jack Fitzpatrick.
Why does Hawthorn want him? But again, they just saw that I could play a role in the team and come in and fulfill it. And that's what he does. He backs people in. He believes in them. And he's about the player showing what he can do as opposed to not harping on what the player can't do. And I think that's a massive thing about coaches. Massive. What can you do and what can you offer us as opposed to you're not good at this, you're not good at that. Don't worry about that. We've got you here because of what you can do.
Yeah. What is it? Express, you know, really highlight the positives and, you know, the negatives. Well, they're not going to change, so let's not focus about that.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Correct. And we work on the deficiencies, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to be a good footballer because you're not a great kicker, or you're not fast enough, or you're not fit enough. It's just they're there to work on whilst we maximise your strengths.
One thing that you were fortunate to do, you were fortunate to play two finals for Hawthorn.
Yeah, correct. Unfortunately, I lost them both. But yeah, I got to play in two, which was incredible. It really was.
And that's what I wanted to ask is, regardless of if you lost one, doesn't really matter, but just that experience, because it's taken Melbourne, what, how many years? 12 years to get to at least finals football. And in that time, you've played two finals, full stop. Like, how much extra does that game go up from like a regular season game to finals football? Like, you can see it from a visual perspective as a supporter, but from a player's perspective, what would the intensity and the pressure go up by, from your experience?
It's a good question. To be able to quantify it, when I catch up every week, we have dinner, and it's myself, Max Gorn, James Frawley, Lyndon Dunn, James Harms, and Dean Kent. So literally, up until this season, Chipper had played in a few finals at Hawthorn and was lucky enough to have won a flag. I played in two, they were losing ones. But other than that, none of them had. Unfortunately, Dunny has been incredibly stiff and still hasn't played in the final. And I really feel, because he's a ripping guy, a ripping character, a great clubman. So I do feel for him at the moment. But again, other than that, the D guys hadn't experienced finals before. And we were talking just literally a couple of weeks ago. Is it that different? Is it made up to be? And I think just the intensity of the crowd makes everything seem so much more intense. You've got 90,000 people there. They're going mad. Literally, at the MCG, when you've got 90,000 people there, I could be talking to you 5 metres away, and I genuinely have to be screaming at the top of my lungs just so you can hear me. And, yeah, the intensity does go up, but I probably can't put my finger on what exactly it is other than the crowd and how intense and loud it is, because at the same time, yes, the intensity does go up, but it is a game of football and that doesn't change. No. So it's probably a bit hotter, and, you know, the intent rises, but at the same time, I probably think intensity from the crowd point of view, to be honest. Yeah. And there's only four games on a weekend and everyone's watching them. So, and I think you know that as a player. So the speculative, I suppose, you know, everyone's watching what's going on in this game. It's not one of three games on a Saturday or two on a Saturday night. It
exactly
is
right.
The only game on a Friday night, the only game on a Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. So I think that's probably what it is.
And
I can't really put my finger on it.
Because I was fortunate to go to both Melbourne games. And the first one against Geelong was just like that. Just the crowd, there was 90 or 91,000 at that game. Similar to the week after against Hawthorn. And you're right, it's just the intensity of the crowd. And I don't know where all the Melbourne supporters got their Melbourne scarves from, because Rebel Sport and all these other mobs weren't selling them over the years. And there were 60,000 Melbourne supporters there when they had 45,000 members. So maybe the scarves have been sitting in storage for a while and they get them out. But just the noise, like, it was just, that'll be not something that won't go away from me. And I took my brother-in-law, he's an Italian, he is a full-blooded Italian, and he's been over in Italy, he's been over to soccer games, you know, 80, 90,000, but even he said that it was just, it was like, how can you have 90 plus thousand people who barrack for two teams and they sit so civilly next to each other, yet can yep. just be so loud. And just every time someone goes near, I said, this is the best. This is why this is simply the greatest game, is that it's, yeah, we do yell, we do scream, but just finals time is just, from the crowd's perspective, it was just out of control. And that Hawthorn game, where it was just, you know, closer, you could just, you can almost feel the oxygen just being sucked out, you know, especially when Gunston hit the post. You could, the crowd just, yep. the hum, like you don't get that through regular season games.
You don't. It's certainly a completely different ball game. And I can honestly say that the 2 weeks, it's actually addictive, to be honest. It's addictive. It's so much adrenaline. It's a massive rush. And the 2 weeks of finals that I was fortunate enough to play were just fun, and we lost. But it was just a fun time to be around. The vibe around Melbourne, again, the intensity of the crowd. I remember the second final that I played. It was the year the Bulldogs were having their run. And when they were up and about, the Bulldogs, like, it wasn't even us, but the crowd and the atmosphere was, it really was just, it's almost a natural high. It's just a remarkable thing to be involved in. And I actually remember having a conversation with the Hawthorn fitness coach. He's a guru, Andrew Jack Russell, yep. nickname Jack. But yeah, Andrew is a guru. But I was talking to him about going into the season of 2017, unfortunately, which ended up being my last. But I sort of spoke with him about the fact that, and it's a bit about what I spoke to you about before, about Tom Mitchell and Max Gawn, that I'd had the 6 years at Melbourne and I experienced playing footy, and I lived the lifestyle of a footballer. And yep, whilst that was good, like, I did have 6 years of it. It's a long time. Whereas I got a taste of what finals was like, and even though we lost, as I said, it was so addictive, and I wanted more. And I wasn't, you know, training that off season there to continue just because I wanted to be a footballer. I wanted more of that. What I felt during that September campaign. And I think it was probably the first time where I understood that you don't need to have lost one to then go on and win one, but to have got a taste of it, I have no doubt that there'll be some fire burning in the bellies of the Melbourne players and every other yep. player, that they got a taste of it now, and you just want more of it. It really is a, I don't know, without sounding too arrogant, I suppose, but it's something you can't describe to someone who hasn't done it.
No. And you know, I was sitting there, like I said, I was sitting there, and I was just the one thing that I would, if I was a player, yes, you'd love to play, but just standing there for the national anthem and just yep. hearing that roar towards the end, that every time that occurs, hairs go up on the back of the neck. And I just looked to my brother-in-law and I said, hey, David, how good is this? How good would it be just to be out there? Just to be able to do what you do in that front of that many people, and it would, we're envious of you. Every person who hasn't had the opportunity to do so, regardless if you win, lose, you know, we are in your envy right now.
Yeah, and you've hit the nail. That's what it is. You do the national anthem, and I think you watch the national anthem happen. It could be grand final day, a barbecue at your house. You could be there. It could be the finals. Whatever it is, the national anthem goes, and as that last word sort of sung, and everyone in the crowd yells, it could be go the D's or go the Hawks or can the Cats, whatever it is. You've lived that as a supporter growing up as a kid for 20 plus years, and then all of a sudden you're involved in that, and that happens, and that's happening around you. Like, you're the one that it's actually happening and you're involved in it. And it's really just a remarkable feeling. And I think a similar story, people say, what was your debut like? Were you nervous? Honestly, once the game's going, you're fine. Even pre-game, I was a pretty relaxed person. Like, I never got too nervous. But for myself, the surreal moment for me was, you go out, you run the lap, and I just remember every time of this, you're going and watching the teams, and as they run out, they do their lap and they run inside the 50 and they all have the shot for goal, and the theme song's going at the same time. And I just remember sort of running around, doing the warm-up, and you're sort of in the moment. I just had this moment where I had a shot for goal, I kicked it, and you see, you know, 20 balls all going goal. You hear the theme song, and it occurs to you that I've watched this happen for 20 years, and now I'm doing it. And it was just, that was the moment for me that, wow, this is real, this is happening. And that there, you know, that and the theme or the national anthem, they're just, as I said, it's just a really great moment of, wow, you can almost take just 1 or 2 seconds to take stock of, I'm actually doing this, and it's pretty cool.
Oh, like I said, I know a guy, Ash Fernie, who I think he played 3 games for Adelaide. And I also know Brad Lloyd, who played Brad Lloyd now at Carlton. I went to high school with him as well too. I think he played 11 or 14 games. And it's the same thing. It's just like, you know what, just to get a taste of it. And you just sit there and go, 3 games. Like, but it's not just 3 games. There's so much that to get to that particular, to be able to do that, you know, once, twice, 3 times. It's more important, you know, it's just, yeah. If I, like I said, everybody who hasn't had that opportunity to do so would be just, you know, in awe to be able to.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that they've said, is that, yeah, the pre-game build-up is one thing, but just getting it out there and running around. And I think what you said is when you first go out there and you go, I used to be, you know, 15 metres on the other side of that fence watching this for so many years. Now I'm actually on the turf running around. That's the surreal aspect.
Yeah, it really, it truly is.
Now, unfortunately, all good things have to end. And
they do.
Yeah, yours ended against the Brisbane Lions, wasn't it? Was that a comeback game? Correct. 2017 or 16?
Yeah, correct. I wrote it down. So last year.
Crossed that last year. So can you just take us through, I know it's a bit of a strange one, take us through what actually happened, but more importantly, how did you sort of get to the realisation that, hold on, I can't do this anymore?
Yeah, so you're right. It was May last year. We played Brisbane, and it was my second year at the Hawks, and my VFL form was really good. And because part of me was probably a little bit frustrated that I hadn't got a game earlier because I felt my form warranted it. And at the start of last year, if you recall, Hawthorn did start the year pretty poorly. I think we were 1-6, or well, I don't know what exactly it was, but we did have a poor start to the year. So I was probably a little bit frustrated that I didn't get my chance earlier, but at the same time, I was really playing for Box Hill, and to be honest, I was in really good form. And I almost felt for those few weeks playing VFL that it was my moment. I was 26. I was one of the blokes. I was the biggest guy on the ground, and I was just able to. It was my turn to be the dominant player on the ground, and that's how I felt. Anyway, I finally got my chance to play in Brisbane last year. I got picked. We played in Tasmania. And unfortunately, I actually don't really recall much or any of the game, to be honest. I got a knee, which was completely fair, in play from Stephen Martin, an ex-Demons teammate, in the ruck.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, that was my footy career done and dusted, basically. I really struggled with the concussion for a long time. I didn't drive for 6 weeks. I was all this kind of stuff. You know, I was really struggling for a while. And you asked me, when did I realise that I couldn't do it anymore? And I was probably fortunate in one way that the decision was never really mine. It was completely made by the doctors who, you know, after a while when we'd done the relevant testing and whatnot, and they just said, look, to be honest, we just have to recommend that you can't play contact sport anymore. So it's certainly a bitter pill to swallow, and it's a difficult one to take. And no one wants to be 26 years old at the time being told they can't play contact sport anymore. But I think the main way in which you can slow the pill, no matter how bitter it is that deep down, I probably do know it's the best thing for me. And that's probably why I am able to stomach the decision. Yeah. Deep down, I probably know it is for the best.
Because I was reading, was that you almost, they said it was the fifth concussion that you had since being drafted by the D's? So,
it was actually my ninth concussion.
Your ninth?
So I had quite a few. but it was my, I think it was my seventh since 2013 or something, some ridiculous number like that. And having said that, the concussions I had previously, I'd never once thought about stopping playing. And it was this last concussion I got was different from the rest in terms of I just felt worse for longer. It was just completely different. And it was, as a result of that, the doctors said, we have to recommend you no longer play contact sport. So that was, where my career ended, unfortunately. But as I said, I think deep down, I probably knew it was for the best. But having said that, you know, if it was left up to me, would I have tried to go again? I suppose you never really know, do you?
So does that mean from a football perspective, it's just full stop? Even at local levels, etc., it's just out for you?
Yeah. Yeah, correct. I mean, when the doctors are saying that we recommend you don't play contact sport because, you know, we don't think it's wise to risk another concussion, well, you sort of take that pretty seriously. So, I unfortunately, we'll never play footy again. I planned on playing footy up until, mid to late 30s because yep. I just love footy, but unfortunately, it's not the way that it ended for me. And at the end of the day, you can't really do too much about it.
Nah, it's some people who just keep going. Yeah, Dustin Fletcher, 41, I think, when he finished, and he could have probably kept going if it was back in, back 30, 40 years ago, he would have kept going because of the way he is. But you know, you look at Angus Brayshaw and some of the troubles, like, he must have been really close. Like, there would have been had to be a decision for him to go, look, mate, it's a 50-50 here. If you cop another big one, it could be all over for you. And he's another one of those guys that has got so much talent under his son who's just, he's just had a bad run. Like, when you're getting kicked in the back of the head with a footy, that's just stiff. That's
genuinely just stiff.
But it's going to be one of those things, unfortunately, where they go, you know what, you're going to have to just have the rest of the year off and then see.
Yeah, so and look, it's a difficult one because you're obviously not privy to the or the conversations that he's having with his doctor and his specialist and the results of his scans and his testing. So, you know, you sort of speculate a bit on the outside. You know, is it, if he has another one, is he finished? Or, you know, is he actually going okay? And is there no reason to suggest that at this point? You don't really know until, I suppose, it happens. But there's no doubt that I'm sure the care and advice he's getting from the doctors and specialists is first class.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that once he does get on the field and does what he loves to do, it just showed the way he stormed home in a Brownlow, which nobody would have seen coming.
Yeah, oh, we've become third, didn't we? Third, like remarkable for, where he'd sort of come from. That you know, at the start of the year, he was starting in the twos. So not only was he, from an outsider's perspective, people going, oh, is he going to make it? But I think even in the team, he wasn't in their best 22 at the start of the year. So, it's a remarkable achievement by him. And exciting to see, you know, where his career goes going forward, because I certainly paid attention to him this year because he became quite a good super coach option. So he was my team and I was watching him pretty closely. And I did spend, I think it was 12 months with him when I was at 12 months, maybe 2 years when I was at the D's. But, so obviously watching and hoping that he becomes the player that they drafted him to be. But again, he's probably another example of, he's taken time, but they've done the right thing by him. He's had his health issues, but development-wise as well, he sort of hasn't been thrust in. He's been in the twos when he hasn't warranted a game, and he's been in the ones when he has. And I think now that they're reaping the rewards of that.
I think Aaron Vandenberg's another one of the where they just, you know, he's had his issues with his ankle, and it was just like, mate, just take your time to get it right. Don't try and rush this, because if you rush it, especially after a year, because I know you're so hungry to do it, but they just... they made him go through the entire process, and they often say that, and you'd be able to tell me this, that rehab is a very, very lonely place. And for him to do what he did when he came back is just a testament, because I can tell you, and you, if I'm wrong, let me know, but 10 years ago, Melbourne wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't. I don't think they would have had the the patience to see someone out to do that.
Yeah, and I think in their defense, I think it's when you're going well, you're allowed to have the patience and take that time and take that risk. But having said that, I do agree with you, and I'm a believer in that. At the same time, I don't think that should matter if the club is strong about its culture and where it's going. And I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. I am good mates with Lyndon Dunn, and I think it's no surprise to me, and this story that I was about to go to will show that I think they've got their culture right, and it's no surprise why they're going so well on field, in that when he hurt his knee earlier this year, he's out of contract, he's 31 years old, he's just they know that he's done his knee. Yeah. But he actually had Nick Maxwell, who's working at the club, come up to him at, whether it was halftime, quarter time, or whatever it was, I'm not entirely sure. But he actually came up to him and said, look, mate, regardless of the result of, this scan, win, lose, or draw, we'll give you another contract next year. And that's just immediately able to put his mind at ease, and he can not have to stress about where he's at. Obviously, you know, you've got a wife, you've got a kid, you've got another young one on the way, you've got a mortgage, all that kind of stuff that people sort of forget that footballers go through, because at the end of the day, it is a livelihood for them as well. And just to be able to say, mate, you can take your time, don't stress about it, we'll back you in and look after you and do the right thing. And I think that just shows that culturally, they've got it right. And it's no surprise now that their, again, results on field are reflecting that.
And it is awesome to see. I think my daughter was fortunate to run out with the D's. She's going back probably 3 years ago, and it might have been Lyndon's 150th. It was the game where Melbourne were in front with St Kilda, and then they lost after, I think it might have been Montagna kicked a goal. It was the one where Tumpus kicked a goal to get them in front, and then about 20 seconds later ended up losing it. And I remember...
Yeah, I remember that game. Yeah. I dropped for that game. I played my last game for the D's the week before that. Yeah. 2015 it was, at Etihad.
Yeah, sorry to bring that up. And I just remember...
His
kids were running out at the same time, and just the smiles on their faces, and, oh, my daddy's this, my daddy's that. And I was speaking to his dad was there, I think, just having a chat. And just the how proud they were, to speak of him. And obviously, I've never met the gentleman. But just to hear that, and then just to see from, I loved watching him run around at the D's. And it was a shame to sort of see him go. But I think the flip side is that I don't mind if people go, especially if they flourish somewhere else and they're given that opportunity. And to see, he's stiff. That sitting on 198 games, and to just not get over that mark. What is he? I think he's the highest number of games played currently in the AFL without having played a final.
I believe that's
stiff. But for the club to say, don't worry, we've got you, that just means now he doesn't have to worry about that mental rehab. He can just focus on the physical side of things as well.
Correct. And it is a massive, massive, massive thing. And, he can aim to be ready to play next year and worry about the form and footy side and the contract stuff of it in 12 months when he sort of needs to be worrying about it, not when he's going, oh, is my career over? How's my knee? What do I need to do? There's so many more distractions. So, again, going back to the point that, because their results this year are certainly better, it probably allows them to do that. I mean, if you take it back to another year of crap that Collingwood have had to go through the last few years in terms of, is Buckley, what's going on? Is it stable? All this kind of stuff. Would they have been able to afford to recontract Lyndon Dunn? Well, probably not, to be honest. But at the same time, I think that the fact they have just goes to show where they're at as a footy club culturally now.
Oh, beautiful. Just a couple of things before we wrap up. I have to ask you a question. What?
Go for it.
So I will. The question I have is, Nathan Jones and Luke Hodge. So two captains that you've obviously worked with. What are the differences between the two? But what do they both what do they have in common that makes them, leaders amongst men for the groups that they represent? Especially even like now Hodgie's gone up to Brisbane. You think of the influence that he's had on that group as well. What is it that makes captains, like, not just, you know, figureheads who toss a coin, but makes them who they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, without trying to state the blatantly obvious, I think anyone would know that both of those players, their number one trait is how competitive they are, and they hate losing. I think that's probably the number one that comes off for both of them. But I think also, and I certainly saw a lot more of Jonesy's development as a player and as a leader at the D's than I did as, you know, well, I got to Hawthorn and Hodgie captained three flags and won two Norm Smiths. So I sort of saw him at the tail end where he had it all, for want of a better phrase, he almost had it all worked out. He knew his body, he knew the game. He saw it incredibly well. His directional talk on field was incredible. Whereas Jonesy was sort of, he was playing at a high level personally. Yep. His leadership was probably initially better in terms of leading by example, because he was probably one of the only ones who week in, week out, you could trust to go out and do his role. So he was learning a lot about what it took to be a good captain, what good leadership is, and to develop that and harness that. And I think the best trait of any leader that I personally believe is the fact that they're leading in their own way and they're not doing it to appease someone else or think, okay, I should be doing it this way. So Hodgie's a different leader to Sam Mitchell, who's a different leader to Nathan Jones, and Nathan Jones is a different leader to Jack Viney.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably, Nathan Jones has matured as a player. I think he's probably getting less of the ball now than he ever used to. He's probably sharing the load a lot more.
Definitely,
yeah. So probably a more selfless player in terms of he's no longer the shining star that he was for Melbourne when he was winning best and fairest after best and fairest. But, I mean, at the end of the day, that was probably because he was the shining light of a pretty dark place. Whereas now he is accepting that he is a one of many, and I think his leadership reflects that. He's, you know, leading by example, as I said, he's exceptional. He's a fierce competitor. And now I think he's, by all reports and how it looks, he's able to bring others along the ride as opposed to just go out, worry about performing well himself. But rather than bringing others along for the ride, it was more just about, I'm doing it this way, try and jump on my back almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm going to lead you boys out and get behind me because I'll take you to the promised land. And if we don't get there, by God, we'll die trying. And I think that's the thing. You don't go winning, you know, to win one best and fairest is tough. To win two, fair, you know, even tougher. But to go three in a row, especially in those tough times, you know, it's good to see him get that reward over the last, well, obviously, I would even say that, you know, just that experience of playing in Perth in that cauldron, which, you know, the less we say about what happened in that first half, the better. But, you know, just to see him get that opportunity to go, okay, you know, it's been 12 years since I've been able to run around and I didn't have any tats at that stage and hair, to now be able to go out and just, you know, this is why, you know, I think it makes you proud. I think him and Gorney would probably be the two that were around the longest to go through all of that, you know, you could say crap, to come out at the end and go, this is what all the hard work has paid for. This is what all standing in the ocean, in the cold water, the early runs, the time trials, all that sort of stuff that we hate to do but love doing with our mates. This is what it's all for. You can't have a smile on your face. And to get a couple of wins, magnificent. So what are you doing with yourself now that football's finished? What's your profession, if you know, what are you up to now?
That's a good question. I think probably the official profession is full-time uni student. That's probably the number one.
Nice.
So I was doing a Bachelor of Business, majoring in Management and Innovation and Marketing whilst I was playing, and I'm just back now doing that full-time. So I'm due to finish that in the middle of next year. So the sooner I finish that, the better. I'd be pretty keen to get that out of the way.
Yep.
At the same time, I enjoyed being an assistant coach at Werribee VFL this year. That was really enjoyable.
Yep.
Alongside the fact that I was actually the runner as well, which just came out of the blue. I was, as I said, doing some assistant coaching, but unfortunately, the week before round one, the guy who actually was the runner suffered a pretty severe set of heart attacks and needed open heart surgery. So I took the role over and actually really enjoyed that. So that's sort of my footy involved. I'm an ambassador at Diabetes Victoria, which I really enjoy being diabetic myself. So it's something I'm hugely passionate about and really enjoy and get something out of doing it. I also host the podcast of Hawthorne.
I was having a look
called
at that.
Fits and Chips.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's with me and my good mate, James Frawley, and we just have a bit of a laugh there. And other than that, I've done a little bit of commentary for special comments for Channel 7 VFL.
Yep.
I work for ABC Grandstand doing special comments for the VFL prelim and grand final. So there's certainly a lot going on that's keeping me busy. But, you know, at the moment, it's all just whilst I'm doing uni. These are the other areas of my life that I'm able to look at and look into and decide, you know, this maybe this one is something that I want to pursue, and this one maybe I didn't enjoy it however I thought, as much as I thought I would, and maybe it's not what I want to be doing. So it's certainly busy, but it's a bit unstructured at the moment, which is a bit frustrating.
It depends on the type of person you are. There's some people like, I don't mind if it's a little bit unstructured, because sometimes the randomness of it's fantastic. But if you got other people who have to have, you know, everything in line, it can be difficult. But I actually did one thing that you mentioned with your diabetes, etc. So you've had diabetes all your life? Is that all your life you've had it?
No, so I was diagnosed in my third year of AFL. So I got it 2 weeks before I turned 21. So it was almost like a, here you go, mate, happy birthday, have diabetes. So it was a very bizarre type of scenario.
Yeah. And so you can sort of, a bit of empathy for Paddy McCartan and the stuff that he's gone through, because he's had his concussion issues, but he's also had his diabetic issues as well too. So trying to
very much so
to marry those two up can be
I certainly feel there's a couple of diabetics in the AFL, and Paddy's certainly one and probably the highest profile. There's Jamie Cripps from West Coast.
Yep.
Sam Reed from WS.
Yep.
There is another one as well. It's escaped me at the moment, but it's funny. Like I've actually not met any of them. I've played on Paddy once, but it actually, you feel like you're best mates with them already. And I must admit that doing some coaching at Werribee VFL this year, there's a player there who has type 1 diabetes, and I did find myself. He was a bit of a coach's pet of mine this year, just because you feel that immediate bond with them. So. Yeah, it's certainly something that, you know, through Paddy, I think he's got them tough. I mean, he's got his concussion issues, which are tough. He's got his diabetes issues, which are, you know, certainly not easy to manage. But throw on top of that the fact that he is a number one draft pick, and it's at St Kilda, probably underwhelmed in terms of where they've meant to be going. And there's so much pressure on him to become the next, you know, the next Jack Revolt or Stuart Lowe or whatever people are saying. So, yeah, he's got it really tough, Paddy, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, quick question when you're with your runner, and I've got two last things to ask you. The first one is, you know, when you're a runner, because I've been fortunate to be runner a couple of times, do you ever find yourself running into position? And actually, like, you can see the ball coming, I'm going to run over here, or... You know where I'm coming from. It's just, you can't get it out of your system, unfortunately.
It's probably the position I didn't realise it was as difficult as what it was, in terms of you're out on the ground. My number one fear and pet hate as a runner would be to give away a free kick. That would just be my biggest fear and nightmare. So you've got to be looking at the ball and reading the play to make sure you're not where the ball's going to go. You need to be able to remember a message. You need to be able to remember which players you're trying to come on or off the ground. And you've got to also be able to find a player and actually keep up with wherever they're going and get the message to them. It's easy enough if you're delivering a rotation. You can just yell across and say, you know, Macca, come off, mate, it's your time. But if you've got to deliver a specific message about a structure or whatever it might be, where you've got to get right next to the player, it's darn hard. So it's certainly a position that I certainly gained a lot more respect for this year. I actually realised how difficult it was, that's for sure.
Yeah, and especially if you're on the opposite side of copping a spray from a player who you're trying to drag off, and they're actually telling you to F off rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Right, one last thing I want to quickly ask before we wrap up is simply this. So you've got an opportunity to create a spine of a football team. So we're going from fullback to full forward, and you also get a ruckman and a non-baller. Based on your... time and it's only players that you've played with, not against. If you had to go from fullback to full forward, a ruckman and an on-baller, who would you pick?
Oh, can I have five Jack Fitzpatricks?
You can't. Well, yeah, no, you can't. We can make yourself captain. How about we go that far?
Geez, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with an underrated fullback. Geez, I played with some good players now. You make me think about it. An underrated fullback and pick Colin Garland from Melbourne.
Oh yeah, he was actually good down forward for a while, then ended up going down back. He was
Garlo was a super player, and I really like him too. So that certainly helps. I'm trying to work out. He's not a centre half back, but he could play there, and it will allow me to pick other players. I'm going to play Hodgie at centre half back.
Hodgie can play anywhere. Anyone else is going to tell him you can't play there.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, he'd get the job done. It's going to be a pretty superstar team, and I just need to be able to fit everyone in. So I'm going to pick Hodgie at centre half back. That way I can have Sam Mitchell on as the midfielder. Mitch is a freak. He's a genuine freak. But probably the one thing about Mitch is he's probably a bit, not as versatile as Hodgie, I suppose. So he has to play as the midfielder. The Ruckman's a tough one. Mark Jamar was bloody good early days at the D's. Gorney's obviously a gun. At the same time, I haven't seen Gorney running out of the centre to kick a match winner. So,
I watched that footage of you kicking that goal out of the centre the other day.
Yeah,
I had to watch that three or four times because that was pure, and that was to get the Hawks in front as well too.
Yeah, it was,
that game.
It was a remarkable day. It was the first game for the club, and to kick a goal for 2 minutes to go to get us back into contention to finish in the top four. It was a truly remarkable afternoon, that's for sure. So, I don't know. I might just slip myself into the ruck, to be honest.
You can go ruck or centre half forward. It's got to be one of the two. No, go ruck. Because there's video footage.
I'd be putting Ruffy at full forward, I'd imagine.
Yep.
Well, actually, geez, it's tough. I might make Ruffy my centre half forward.
Yep.
Which will then probably then allow me to put Cyril at full forward.
Nice.
I would think. Although one who I only played with him a couple of games and he didn't get to show his best for long enough. Yep. But over a 6 week period, or however long it was, Mitch Clark, when he was at Melbourne, was unstoppable in those 2013 or 2012 type times. And he probably, if he had played long enough, he really could have made a run for this spine, I think. But, I'll definitely stick with Cyril. I think he might have Cyril.
I remember the first game Mitch played, we played the Brisbane Lions. I know Melbourne were virtually like shoo-ins to win that, and we didn't. We got beaten.
Yeah.
But he was the shining light on that particular day. Mitch Clark. And so I think he's one of those ones that we just didn't get to see the best of. And
no, it's a shame with Mitch. And I mean, physically, his body let him down. And he certainly had his mental demons too. So it certainly was a shame that we didn't get to see the very best of him for long enough. Because from what I did see of him for a very short period of time, he was a very good footballer.
Last thing I have to quickly ask you, who gets you excited? Like, what is it about the game at the moment that gets you excited? Like, if you know that there's somebody going to be on TV right now, who would it be that you would switch it on and just sit there and just sit back and watch?
There's a lot, but I think my undoubted favourite to watch would be Big Buddy Franklin, I think. He's my number one. There's a lot of players I've got man crushes on, to be honest. But the big man, Big Buddy, I don't think he can be topped in that regard.
And how old is he now? He's 34?
He'd be 30. Yeah, I don't think he'd be that quite that old. I'd say 31, maybe. He'd be, I reckon he drafted at the end of 04, and he would have been 17 when he got drafted, I reckon.
So you see, at a guess. He's just taking it to another. Like, he'll be probably the last person to kick 1,000 goals in AFL, because the way the game is played, it's not going to. But, you know, even just going to watch him, and you know, everybody said that they were at the game when he did the run down the wing, and everybody said he did the one in the final against, I think it was Collingwood.
Adelaide.
Yeah, Adelaide, yep. Everybody said.
Yep.
But you just can't take your eyes off him. He has just a presence that, you know, if he's on, tell everybody not to call back for 2 hours, because it's just going to be an excitement machine. It was just amazing.
He's just next level. He's 6'7" or 6'6". He moves like a gazelle. He's strong, takes marks, he kicks long goals. He does it. Yeah, he tackles hard. He's just remarkable to watch in full flight.
He is amazing. But you have been amazing as well, Jack. Like I said, we've been sitting here just having a chat, and I've looked at my clock and gone, crikey, it's already 9:30 on a Tuesday evening. I can't say more than thank you for your time this evening.
No, pleasure, mate. Chat
and just, you know, the amount of information, not information, but just the ability just to open up and just see it from your perspective. And you know, I can't thank you enough for that. I know the listeners all say the same thing, and you know, feedback that I get from them, I'll be sure to pass on to you. So I can't say thank you more than enough for just taking time out tonight to just have, like, literally just have a chat. My dad was here tonight. He's going, so what are you going to ask? I said, oh, I've got a couple things, but I think the best thing is just ask something and just let people talk, and that's what you've done tonight.
Yeah, I know that about it.
Pardon?
And I think at the end of the day, I mean, I'm a massive footy fan, a massive footy nut, so I'm just happy to sit here and talk footy, to be honest. It's just, it's funny how sometimes, probably sounds a bit wankerish for want of a better word, but it's just sometimes I happen to be involved in the football stories I'm talking about, I suppose. But I just love footy.
And I think there's a lot of people that I talk to, and the people who listen to this will definitely catch that. So I can't say more than that, than say thank you for your time.
More importantly,
if people want to get in contact with you for talks or sportsman's nights or whatever, how do they do that? Do they contact you directly? Do they go through your Twitter feed? Do they go through, what's the best way to get them in contact with you?
Probably Twitter and Instagram, I would say, would be the two.
And the Skype call drops out. So get on Fitzy's Instagram page, get on Fitzy's Twitter feed, book him for corporates, book him for sportsman's nights. He's an absolute gem. He's passionate about the game. He's got lots of cool things to talk about. And more importantly, he's an all-around top bloke. Can't thank him enough for this two-part special. More importantly, I've got a few things floating up in the next couple of weeks. So keep your subscriptions locked in for the Lace Out podcast. I'm Christopher Pepper. And more importantly, Jamie Wallace will be back bigger than ever with me in 2019. But remember, people, it's not just loving your football. It's loving it. Lace out. Take care, listeners.